never rests.
What is up, everybody? I'm Jake Rowe. He is Jake Roos, and we are from Dogs HQ live here on Thursday morning. Georgia has wrapped up a pro day. They've wrapped up a spring practice. They've got another one coming this afternoon. I'm pretty sure we're going to get to see some practice this afternoon, although we have not been told yet a time for viewing, so who knows what could happen. But we're here, and we're going to talk about spring practice. The Hoop Dogs dropped out of the SEC tournament last night in the first round by Oklahoma, a team that's kind of fighting for its life. We'll get into that. We got to hear from a lot of different people in this show and a lot of different of our partners, but none more important, none better than American Pride Bank right up there. You see it, APB, your community bank, but also your trusted partner. And listen, American Pride Bank's been with us here for a few weeks, and we love them. These guys are awesome. They are great partners, and everything you need at American Pride Bank, it's there. Whether you need to do savings with money market accounts, you need to set up a checking account, business checking, credit cards, American Pride Bank has those tools. It has them all online for its customers and for its partners. And we appreciate American Pride Bank. The Georgia Show is presented to you by American Pride Bank. And Jake Roos is presented to you by the North Georgia and South Tennessee mountains is where he comes from. What's going on with you, buddy?
Not much this morning, brother. Just getting up and going and looking forward to this one, man. It's a big week, actually, for Georgia. We finally got some real ball to talk about, and that pro day was pretty interesting as well. So let's hop on in here, Jake, talking about spring practice underway. And I'm just curious. I wasn't on site for it. I know you were for the first day. You know, I guess probably the big story was Colby Young being reinstated. Talk to us a little bit about that. That was one of the main storylines to come out of it.
Yeah, I mean, God, there were so many big storylines, I felt like. But that was a big one. It was very expected. I had that story written for weeks. You know, although you really didn't have any confirmation on it, you kind of knew, hey, when he got cleared by the Equal Opportunities Office to come back to practice, if he had eligibility and got the legal situation resolved, he was going to be able to come back and play. So Colby Young's back, second year in the program. I think we talked about this, or it may have been Rusty and I talking about this, but receivers with a, you know, fifth-year receivers with, you know, 6'5", and the production, the 10 touchdowns, all that stuff he did at Miami, the stuff he did at Georgia with a second year in Georgia scheme, that guy wasn't available in the transfer portal. Those guys aren't out there very often. And Georgia, they got a big break with this, just with the JUCO ruling. And Colby Young got a big break too, by the way. You know, I mean, I think when Colby Young, you know, next time he, you know, somebody he gets a flat tire or something, next time Colby Young's alternator stops working or he needs a new battery, I hope he doesn't get too ticked off about it. I think he needs to kind of back off and say, hey, let me, you know, like that old hymn we used to sing at church, count your blessings, name them one by one. You know, yeah, I think Colby needs to do that because this is a very, very good break for him. And listen, for his sake, I hope he takes advantage of it.
Oh, absolutely. Of course. I mean, I think everybody's hoping that that's the case. And, you know, I think, Jake, the really interesting piece of this is that it not only gives Georgia some experience back with a guy that they had really hoped to kind of lean on last year, but when you add Noah Thomas to the mix to this, that's what really intrigues me. That's a couple of real matchup nightmares for opposing defenses. I imagine that they'll be able to scheme some stuff up for those two big guys.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Ralph Sampson, Kim Olajuwon type stuff. I mean, it's the old school. I know a lot of folks are going to get jazzed up about red zone and jump ball and like you're talking about matchup stuff. The thing about these guys, and you know, something that I kind of noticed last year with Colby Young, and I definitely noticed it with
Noah Thomas.
Noah Thomas, yeah, I kept wanting to call him Ra Ra Thomas. Noah Thomas, just bad stuff here. He's a run after catch guy too, even though he's 6'6". I mean, he's a tough guy to tackle once he gets his hand on the ball. I mean, I'm not saying he's a quick screen, you know, now pass type guy, but I mean, when you talk about somebody who can go and run like a, you know, a 14-yard dig, catch it, break a tackle, make something happen. He had a 70-something yard completion against Auburn this past year, really tore them up. I like Noah Thomas a lot, and the returns there have been really good. And, you know, you combine those two big guys with the likes of Zach Branch and Dylan Bell and Sakovi White and these run-after-catch guys. And, listen, I mean, you're able to – you talk about the matchups. You're able to put these guys and split them out and use their size in the blocking game and while also getting receiver skill out of them. Like, you have to commit a cornerback, a smaller cornerback in every instance when you compare to those two to you know, defend them downfield. But then that guy's also got to contend with those big bodies when it comes to blocking, and that counts for the run game, counts for everything. I like the makeup of that, and I think the receiver room is more natural this year, and I think it's more it's definitely bigger, you know, when you consider C.J. Wiley and adding guys like him in there. And you've got more guys over 6 feet. You got more guys that can go up and get contested catches that don't need to separate to make, you know, chunk plays for you.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. No doubt about it. You know, I think that that was one of the more compelling ones. I'm curious what else stood out to you, though, about the early goings of this. Hearing from Kirby for the first time this spring, getting to meet with some of the players, you know, what kind of caught your eye or ear in the early goings here of spring practice?
Well, I mean, obviously him going as far as to say he's got the best staff in the country. We talk about this a lot on the board, and I want to kind of – there's some things you can say sometimes that just don't come through whenever you're trying to talk about them. I don't think Kirby's right about that. I mean, I don't. I mean, I think there's probably
Here's the debate that they've been having on the board, and I do think that it's a relevant one. When you take it top to bottom, is there anybody you would swap the staff out for? I don't know if that's the case. I understand that there are pieces that you may want to improve upon, and I'm not going to discount that for anybody. I think that those are relevant conversations to have. But I think top to bottom, you've got kind of a difficult argument with Kirby here in terms of the makeup of the staff.
Yeah, I can see that. But I'm going off odds, right? Like, sure. The odds of you having, of you objectively having, if there was a way to measure it, if we could go ask God himself, who's your favorite, you know, coaching staff in America. I doubt it's Georgia. Okay. You know, that, you know, probably don't go to church enough or something. They don't do enough communion. Sure. Yeah. Either way, like, I get where people are coming from, you know, but I don't think all of this kind of ascribing different emotions or different reasons to Kirby, I think, is just ludicrous. I mean, guys, listen, I work for Dogs HQ, and Jake Roos is my really good friend, and Rusty Mansell is my really good friend. If either one of those guys were like bringing Dogs HQ down, or like, you know, trying to bring it down, and I was able to say, hey, we got to fix this right now, I would do it. I would make it happen in an instant. It's what I've put my life into. It's my work. It's my legacy. And Kirby's the same way. And Rusty brought this up, and it needs to be said again. There's a clear counterexample to this. Kirby won't fire friends. He fired James Coley. Not only did he fire, he kind of humiliated James Coley, if you really want to get into it. He hired Todd Monken, okay? Then he said, basically said James Coley's going to move to an offensive assistant coach. Hired him, demoted him, let him go. He went to Texas A&M, and it had no problem. And then Coley leaves South Carolina to come back. That's how these things operate. It's a business, and these guys know that. And that's the only thing I have pushed back on. Like, I don't know if this is going to work. I don't know if Georgia's going to be any better. I don't know if – listen, if you say they're going to be worse, I can't really argue with you. The only argument I've got is I don't think Kirby, who runs the show, is going to let it be worse. I just don't think it is. I think Kirby – I know there's only so much he can do, but he can get those guys into gear. And he can get this team into gear, and he can kind of get this thing going. And another thing I would point to, those aren't the only two coaches that everybody wants to get rid of, okay? Everybody wanted to get rid of Dante Williams as well. Kirby's had no problems flipping defensive back coaches over the years, fellas. There is no
Not always. You're not going to hear the word fire used a lot, but he's moved on from some guys like that.
Yeah, I mean,
you should explore other pastures.
Totally. And really the only coach he's ever, like, the word fire has ever been officially used was Tracy Rocker. And I think we ended up having to go into his personnel file, not personnel file, but we had to make an open records request to get the personnel file to find out that he was actually fired. I remember doing that years back. When I look at this and you know, kind of, you know, evaluate it from my whole thing, I say, all right, well, Kirby didn't let go of Dante Williams when everybody else says he should. Maybe Kirby thinks, like, hey, continuity is the way to go. If you don't believe it, that's fine. Like, if you don't think it's the right thing to do, that's cool. I get it. But kind of riling yourself and everybody else up by saying things ain't ever going to change, he don't get it and never will, you know? Like, give me a break with that. You said the same thing about Stetson and Chaz Chambliss and Dalen Everett and Dan Jackson and Keely Ringo. And I mean, I can just keep naming names. So let's calm down with all that. Like, at the end of the day, he may just be making a bad decision, or he may be making a good one. I certainly have my doubts as to whether Georgia's going to be better offensively next season, or whether they're going to correct any of those issues. I have them 100%, but I don't think it's fair to do two things that we're commonly doing in this situation, which is, one, you absolutely positively know for a fact what Kirby's thinking here. That's, you don't, and that's dumb. Two, anybody who disagrees, if you think Bobo and Searles need to go, anybody that disagrees with you is a moron. Well, Kirby's not a moron. He disagrees with you, okay? And those of you who are saying you don't know ball, If you think Bobo and Searle should be gone, hey, when Kirby fires them a year from now, if Kirby fires them a year from now, then, you know, is Kirby going to not know ball at that point? Okay, so let's calm down. All right, let's discuss this like grownups. We can do it. I promise.
Some carryover here from the board, in case you've been wondering what's going on.
But it's in the comments. It's like on socials too. Like, no, it's even worse. Like, I figured, you know, dog walk, you're dealing with we're dealing with the fringe, right? We're dealing with the 1% of 1% Georgia fans, the ones that follow it year round. Dude, the ones in the Facebook comments are 10 times worse. It is unhinged. I mean, I make the joke about Kalen DeBoer losing 4 or 5 games and bricks being tough to find in Alabama at the hardware store. I'm worried about bricks in Mike Bobo's house. I really am.
I understand. We also had Pro Day this week, Jake. Pro Day comes and goes. How did you feel the Dogs did in this one? Some pretty eye-popping times for Dan Jackson. That's what really caught my eye, man. Sounded like he really put on a show, impressing people. I heard there were some oohs and ahs, that kind of thing. Chaz Chambliss with a very nice bench set. Mikel Williams, I think, got outrun, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Mikel
was in tremendous shape. That was probably what stood out to me the most, is Mikel at 6'5", 265 pounds. Man, he carries it like a slender edge player. I mean, he carries it like it's unbelievable. It really is kind of just those humans, the way they're put together, and that's why Mikel's going to be such a big deal there at the next level. And, you know, listen, I sat there amongst some Pittsburgh. I you know something I learned? The Canadian Football League sends scouts to these things.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I saw is it the Saskatchewan Rough Riders? Is that what they are?
The Rough Riders, yes.
Yeah, they were there. So we're standing right beside him. I saw a guy in a green jacket, and I was like, that's not Eagles green. Like, that's – no. And I started, like, kind of looking around, and then there it was kind of in smaller letters. It said Saskatchewan, and I was like, dang, I did not know. It's the first time I've ever realized the Canadian Football League goes to these things. But I was standing beside him. There were a couple of other scouts.
Player, eh?
Yeah. sorry, didn't mean to interrupt you.
Yeah.
But there were a couple of scouts to my right, and then there was they were just distinctive looking guys. The Steelers and the Bears were to my left, because the Bears guy was standing up on a chair so he could kind of see over everybody, a little bit of a shorter guy. And when Dan Jackson ran his four, oh, I'm sorry, I was on Mikel Williams. When Mikel Williams comes out, like, I'm not sure a group of girls on their the bachelorette party would have made more noise than they made when Mikal Williams walked out without his shirt on. I mean, it was just, these guys were just kind of, I don't know, it was the weirdest sound and stuff, like, oh goodness gracious, look at that dude. I was like, man, you know, this is, you know, meat market out here. But, you know, he comes walking out, he's in great shape, he runs, and then, you know, there's some like, man, he's something. And Dan Jackson runs, and I turned immediately because I got him at a 4.41. And I turned and looked because I was on one knee up at the Steelers scout because I had been talking to him. And he goes, like he was so fired up. Bears guy was the same way. The other scouts were the same way. The Canadian Football League scout didn't – I mean, he was nonplussed by anything, basically. I mean, you can't surprise him. He's seen Canadian football. So and polar bears probably. But, yeah, so that's the way that went. And those two definitely impressed. I didn't get to see a ton of Gunner throwing in, like, to the receivers, but I did notice watching him warm up that he's worked on kind of a higher release in terms of a higher set hand separation. You know, his hands were kind of down here when he was separating. It was kind of coming like a big wheelie motion. I thought that he's kind of worked on that and is working on a little bit of a quicker release. You could definitely see him making the effort there. And then, you know, obviously there was – Warren Brinson's comment, which was probably the news of the day.
We're gonna talk about that. I've got that slated for later. But okay, you know, another guy that I felt like was a little bit off the radar, but everything I saw looked really good on him, Jake, was Ben Jurasek. Sounded like that he had a pretty solid day overall. Some nice times for him. So
yeah, Ben Jurasek ran well. I had him under 4.7 both times, and I think I got him at 4.63 on one of those. But yeah, you could hear some murmurs whenever he ran too. And I tell you, that's the first time I've ever seen him in person. One, I think he's trying a little too hard to look like Travis Kelce. And two, I'm only semi-joking there. I mean, listen, the guy's got a little bit of a tight haircut and a mustache. I mean, what else can you do? But two, man, really good looking athlete on the hoof. We have this term in kind of in what we do called high cut. Means kind of you're a high waisted guy, you're real long legs, long limbs. And that's him all day long, real long arms, real long legs, good stride. I mean, he moves well. There was a big adjustment for him to come play in the SEC, and I thought he got better as the year went on. Georgia needs him to get drafted because they're trying to keep a streak of tight ends drafted that I think is at 7 years now. Maybe
he'd go a long way, too, to kind of boosting their numbers in terms of most players drafted. I do think they've got that potential, man, once again. Speaking of potential – you got the potential for some nice sunglasses from our friends at Sun Heist. Tell them about it.
That's right. That's right. Our guys over at Sun Heist are awesome. Shane and Mary Heist, they live in Jefferson, Georgia. They're local. Mary is from Augusta. She is a Georgia fan through and through. Shane's from Louisiana. We're not going to hold that against him because Louisiana is awesome. And LSU is, you know, they're not bad either. You know, it's not the most hated Georgia rival out there. I've had a lot of fun with LSU fans over the years. And we obviously love our man Shea Dixon over there. But so listen, that's where they come from. The sunglasses is what they do. Listen, protect your eyes with Sun Heist eyewear. These things are lightweight frames, and they're also durable. Lifetime warranty. Shane and Mary put their full faith behind their frames. All the lenses are poly. One way they're either polycarbonate or they are nylon frames, but I mean, not nylon frames, nylon lenses. They are also very durable. The lamination effect is not there with these. The polarization is injected into these glasses. They won't peel away. They won't diminish over time. These things hold up. They're built to last, and they're a perfect partner for us. Listen, you can sort by fit. You got a big head like I do, you can find that. If you got different styles you want, you can find that too. They've got new stuff. They stay ahead of the curve. And these are premium sunglasses. This is premium eyewear for a not, you know, expensive price. I mean, this is very reasonable. And listen, these guys are awesome. They're great people. And we appreciate Sun Heist. Go out there, check them out. Protect your eyes. Sun Heist, SunHeist.com. Let's also talk about my man, Andy Ludicky, over at My Perfect Franchise. Listen, Andy's been with us for a long time. You've heard us say this over and over, but if you want to take your life and put your career in your own hands, go talk to Andy and he can find your fit in the franchise world. You could be a displaced corporate executive. You could be somebody who has just had a dream and you've always wanted to get into a certain space. Andy can help you get there. He's done a lot of this. He's hooked people up with their American dream before. He's going to do it again, over and over and over again. And that's why you go check him out, myperfectfranchise.net. And best of all, his services are completely free to you. So go check out our guy, Andy Ludicky, and he'll get you sorted and figure out how you can move on.
Speaking of moving on, Jake, that defensive line at Georgia moving on in a big way. And this quote from Warren Brinson opened up some eyes yesterday from our guy, Jeremy Johnson, fellow Savannah native Warren Brinson on 5-star freshman Elijah Griffin so far. Next Jalen Carter. That's it.
That's it. That's all he said. I'm more taken aback by the fact that on Jake Roos's Twitter, relevant people are Jeremy Johnson, Rusty Mansell, and Jake Rowe. You need to meet new people.
I need to go follow y'all.
We need you some new friends. Yeah. We got to do for some reason I don't have my blue check that I paid for right there. That sucks too. But yeah, so dude, this comment is so loaded, and I bet Kirby Smart is just, I bet when he said it, I bet when Warren Brinson said it, Kirby like felt like a voodoo doll had been like poked. He's like, oh my God, what was that? Oh, somebody said something positive about one of my guys. I've got some entitlement to maybe tamp down at this point. But what a loaded statement, man. What an absolutely loaded statement.
Yeah. I mean, I expect that this is something that Kirby is going to get asked about, right? I mean, in the next time you guys get to talk to him and the opportunity, and look, I expect that he will shy away from it. I expect that he will probably, you know, try to tamp down these expectations, try to step back and say, yeah, you know, we have high expectations for all these guys. You know, Elijah's coming along. He's doing a great job. But when you hear it from a guy like Warren Brinson, Jake, to me, that's different because he's played with Jalen Carter. He's played with Jordan Davis. He understands what the makeup of guys of that level are. And it's not, to me, the fact that he would pull the name Jalen Carter of all the guys that he's played with that have surrounded him on this defensive line, and that's the guy he would point to, is really telling. I mean, he knows what the makeup of a guy like that is. He knows what the athleticism of a guy like that is. I think
there's one thing you haven't mentioned yet that I think is hilarious. They came in the same class.
Oh, you're right. You're right. I didn't even think about that. Yeah, you're right.
We're being recruited together.
Yeah, you're right.
Jalen leaves 1 year early. Warren plays one extra year because he plays five with his COVID season.
Yeah.
And they came together in the same class. Those two were together. I mean, there's a three-year overlap.
I'd forgotten that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you look back, you want to think about a D-line class and the snaps they got out of a D-line class. I mean, good gracious. You know, Naz Stackhouse, Warren Brinson, Jalen Carter all in one class. It's unbelievable. So, yeah, dude, I think you hit the nail on the head there. What I thought was interesting when he said it, because Jeremy sent me the audio, is, you know, I think it was Mark Weiser who tried to clarify, like, hey, well, you know, did you see him in Savannah? Like, where did you see him? He goes, no, I just saw him at practice yesterday. I was like, well, I think we got a practice standout from yesterday. I think we put stock up on Elijah Griffin after the first day of practice, because Warren Brinson saw him and compared him to maybe the best defensive lineman in the history of your program.
Well, and I got to tell you, Jake, the thing about it is, I said this on the board, Kirby will probably try to tamp this down. But behind the scenes, maybe you've heard something different. I certainly haven't. I've yet to talk to anybody who has suggested the kid is anything less than spectacular. The expectations around this guy from people who know what's going on, who've been around this for a long time, are that he is this caliber of player, that he can be, you know, Jalen Carter is a lofty comparison to make for anybody. But that Elijah Griffin is, that there are not a lot of Elijah Griffins in the world.
No, there's not. He's a dude. And, you know, I'm worried we're going to talk about him long enough. One of us is going to injure ourselves. Like, we're going to hurt our collarbone or something, because he's something. He is, man. He is. I remember we were in Austin when Palmer and I were in Austin when Elijah Griffin committed. And it was the day, it was our day in Austin. It was that Friday. And we went and had La Barbecue was where we went to get our, you know, beef short rib and all this stuff, or beef rib and all that stuff. And we ate, went back to the van because they gave us a rental car for a van, and we covered the Elijah Griffin commitment. And we're waiting on everything to go down, and Palmer hadn't seen his film yet. And Palmer's like, hey, are you going to do the huddle? And I was like, yeah. And he goes, And I pulled up his huddle and I started watching it, and the sound was really loud on it. You know how it gets, like, you know, just something pops up and it was really loud. I think an ad came on or something. And so Palmer kind of snapped over and started looking at it. And then he was watching it and he saw the first two plays. I can't repeat what Palmer said, but it was something along with the cadence. I mean, it was, you know, it was loud too. I remember some people walking by and kind of turning their heads at the car. But Palmer had some loud words for the first time he saw Elijah Griffin. He goes, that's unreal, like what he's doing there. And listen, I know it was kind of small school ball, but it was also one of those games was against Cedar Grove in the state championship game. He was the same, you know, mean, like as Herman Boone said, Denzel Washington, and I'm the same mean old cuss to them as I am to anybody else. He was giving them the same treatment, the same business. I think Georgia's got a real special player there. And you know, listen, we thought they were going to put Justice Terry up beside him too, and that didn't happen. We thought we might have a chance to put Kevin Wynn up beside him, and that didn't happen either. But getting him in the fold is big. And then obviously, you know, they'll have a chance to kind of maybe add somebody like Seven Cloud to come in and help right away. He's on campus today, according to Rusty. That's Georgia's building on the D-line, and they're getting some of those difference makers back. I know that a lot of fans have been pining for the difference maker over playing a bunch of different guys up there so much is, you know, let's get in there, get a guy that can play a high number of snaps. And those guys come in super handy, Jake, when you talk about like, hey, it's third and two, or, you know, somebody that can beat a block right now and go make something happen. Those are really valuable football players, and Georgia learned that with Jalen Carter, who, listen, when I went back and looked, you know, I wrote that story, I was really surprised at Jalen Carter's production. He is living proof that don't look at the stat sheet and determine how great a D lineman is. 3 years, 6 sacks, and I think 17 tackles for a loss. And, you know, you got Richard Seymour out there back in 2000, had over 100 tackles from his defensive tackle position. Sure. And I still think Jalen Carter's just as good or better.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, look, to me, the thing about a guy like Warren Brinson is, or I'm sorry, about Elijah Griffin is that he does have the opportunity, I think, because of his skill set, to be a factor even this year. I'm not saying he's going to start or anything like that, but I think he's going to play meaningful minutes. And I think the thing about it is, too, when you're working with a guy like this, especially in this era, probably never more pronounced than right now, you got to get what you can get out of this guy. You need to get all you can out of him while he's here, because you are not going to have him for 4 years. That is not going to happen for Elijah Griffin. He's not playing an extra year at Georgia. If he does, something went awry. So I think you got to go ahead, get what you can out of a guy like this, in my opinion. You talked about some recruiting. 5-star quarterback Jared Curtis in town today, Jake Rowe. Coming off of an Oregon visit, now he is in Athens, taking in the Classic City for what looks to be a pretty crucial set of visits here. He comes off of a long one to Oregon, and now spending time in Athens. The timetable on this, not totally set. We saw something from his agent today talking about, you know, it's not going to be just about the money. I'm sure it's going to be somewhat about the money.
Also said that Jared Curtis is going to commit to the school of his choice, and then they'll start talking about money. How's that oceanfront property in Nebraska going for you?
Right. Brother? Sure. You I'm sure it'll never be brought up. I'm sure no one will talk about it.
We gotta quit hiding behind like, oh, we're doing this. Listen, the right way is to get as much money as you can. Let's go ahead and say it. The right way is to milk it, brother. If you can set yourself up for life in these 3 years, go right ahead. All right. That's the right way. Quit acting like it's about anything. And I'm not saying about anything else, but like saying it, you know, trying to give us the impression that it's not about it at all. Give me a break. Come on.
Absolutely. I mean,
yeah.
Your impressions, though, going into this one, I'll tell you my feeling on this, Jake. I think that this is going to come down to two things, and it's going to come down to distance versus money. And that's all it's going to come down to. I think he feels like he can be developed at either place. I think he feels like he can make a ton of NIL money at either place. I think he feels like the opportunities are ample at either place. But if he wants to stay closer to home, that's going to be Georgia. If he wants to make the most money, he's going to go to Oregon. And that's all it boils down to in my mind. I don't think that there's that big of a difference between those two things other than those two differentiating factors.
I certainly think that that is the, and that may not totally encompass the situation, but I do, I agree. I think that that throws a very large tarp over most of it, you know, like a big portion of what we're dealing with here. I think also, you know, family, I think, is going to come into this. You know, listen, these guys do end up making a lot of money, but when you start talking about, you know, having to arrange to travel to this and that and this and that, you lose a lot of value in what you get paid. So it's not like, yes, well, it's, yeah, they're making millions now, so the travel doesn't matter. But yeah, but if you spend, yeah, you're making millions, but if you end up having to spend 80 grand traveling next year, then, you know, it is what it is. So I think family is going to be a big part of this too. And I do know that If that's the case,
that's advantageous for Georgia, in my opinion. I think that Georgia really does a nice job in that regard with him. There's a reason that Jared Curtis was previously committed to Georgia. There's a reason that the people around him, you hear consistently, have some really close relationships with this staff. I'm curious, though, Jake, and I'm not going to pin you to this necessarily. I mean, I'm not like holding you to it. Do you have a gut feel on it? I kind of do.
I still like Georgia. That's my gut feeling on it.
I feel like their pursuit of guys like Landon Duckworth, the fact that they went out and offered Bo Bentley. I think that here's the thing. I guess I shouldn't say this yet. I feel like, though, we're going to know in a couple of weeks. I feel like this visit will really kind of tell the tale. I think that this is kind of the main differentiator because, and I've said this consistently, you cannot put yourself in the Arch Manning situation again.
Yeah.
You can't chase that.
Well, and I think that's why I haven't looked at what you just mentioned as any sort of factor. I mean, they've been offering guys. They were offering a lot of these guys whenever Steve and Rusty and everybody else were saying definitively Georgia was the team to beat, you know? So that doesn't really register for me. For me, it's more just about like I know he committed there one time.
They offered though. It's like when you go back and you read the things that Landon Duckworth, for example, has said, it's every day. It's the amount of attention they're spending right on these other guys.
Well, that goes into it, like you're talking about. Like, I mean, you can't get like you said in text, you can't get arched. You can't get arched again. And I agree with you on that. I just don't know that it's an indication they don't feel like they're getting him. Even if they get him, Jake, they had Dylan Raiola snatched out from under him at the very last minute in December. They've, you know, and then they didn't even have it. They couldn't hardly really grab a backup there for that. Florida tried to swing in on Ryan Montgomery this past year at the last minute and had him thinking. So, now less than ever do I really pay attention to kind of, oh, well, new offers are going out. They're worried, you know, because, yeah, they're always worried. They're worried if they got a guy committed and he tells them, hey, I'm committed and I'm shutting it down. They're worried that tomorrow he's going to call and ask if he can, you know, hey, you cool if I go visit Mississippi? Why are you going to Mississippi State this weekend? What's going on there? Well, I mean, you know, the grass is green, coach. That ain't the only thing green. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So that's how these things go. And that's no shot at Mississippi State. I'm just saying that school in general. Like, schools just come out of nowhere and make things happen. Like, nobody had Nebraska on the radar for Dylan Raiola. And they got late in the process, and they had some cash free up, and they probably had a booster or two come in and be like, hey, let's make a run at this kid. And as it turns out, he wanted the money, and he wanted the legacy. He wanted it in terms of their pitch. He was for sale.
Speaking of making a run, Georgia Hoops did not do that in the SEC tournament.
Exactly how I thought it was going to go.
Did exactly you?
Because Oklahoma was fighting for its life, and Georgia was probably, you know, hanging around. Like, you know, they feel like they were in. They probably celebrated that season, you know, ending win against the regular season ending win against Vanderbilt a little bit. Really enjoyed it. I think they knew they were going dancing. I thought the game was horribly officiated last night, and Pat Adams is the Angel Hernandez of college basketball. He is the worst. He makes college basketball the worst version of itself. The man is addicted to being on television. He is addicted to bringing attention to himself. He's going to have one of those animated charge calls where he crow hops 17 times and does it, or one of those deals where he just blows a whistle and runs off somewhere else. out of nowhere to check a monitor. I think he goes and like Joe Montana's it. It's like goes and calls his wife real quick or something. But he is, dude, without getting too personal, he's really terrible at his job.
Just I really feel like we're going to get his burner in the comments under this video.
I want to call him a bunch of names. And it's not, and listen, it's not even because a bunch of the calls I went against Georgia last night. It's like when the game got kind of there at the end, he started calling a bunch of ticky-tack fouls on Oklahoma for some reason. And I'm like, dude, let's get this game over. What is going on? Like, is this the last game of the day? And Patty P's got to be on TV. You know, Patty's got to be on TV. I mean, come on, dude. But anyway, it was very
important. Did you do anything from that game, though, that gave you concern going into the NCAA tournament? Now the Dogs were away.
Yeah, same thing's given me concern all year. Why Georgia's going to be a number 10 seed. They're limited. They're not the best team in the country. But I do think they are talented enough to make a run. They just got to avoid these long stretches, these long scoring droughts. And they've got to avoid getting Silas Demery into foul trouble, which he hasn't been all year. With 5 minutes left to go in the game, because that was a big, big deal in how that went down. Because Georgia didn't just lose a score. It lost an ace defender there. And it was just really weird how that game played out last night. And Oklahoma, I think, kind of tasted it there at the end. When it got a little bit of an opening, it was kind of like, all right, well, you know, this is our chance and we can't miss it. And they seized it. But Georgia's going to get into the tournament. Hopefully, we'll avoid an 8 or a 9 seed and grab a 10. Because then they can play a 7 and have a chance to play a 2 in the next round. But listen, it's vipers and venomous snakes all over the place up there at the top, you know, top 8. This college basketball has got about 10 phenomenal teams in it this year for sure.
You think 10's the spot though?
Yeah, I think so. I think 10 seed is where Georgia should want to be. I mean, I think they could still get as high as an 8 or a 9, but you don't want to have to contend with a 1 and sure. To get to the Sweet 16 if you can help it.
Well, look, we're back. And when is selection? When's the bracket come out?
On Sunday.
Sunday. Okay. All right.
Yes, selection Sunday.
Fantastic. Well, maybe we'll. I don't know what time that happens.
Well, we'll figure it out. Right. I'm sure they've already said it. No, I think it's mid afternoon.
Oh, good. All right. Well, we get to talk about that on the Georgia show then on Sunday as well. Yeah. Looking forward to that. That'll be interesting. And we'll get to talk a little bit about a full week of spring practice, which exciting.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll actually have gotten a chance to see the practice. It's Selection Sunday is actually 6 p.m. on Sunday, okay. March 16th, and it'll air on CBS. So if you're looking for that, you've got it.
This, you know, they're going to drag that thing out till like 10 p.m.
No doubt.
Snoop Dogg's going to perform.
They usually do a pretty good job of getting it out to you. And then
David Blaine's going to do one in a block of ice. They
usually do a pretty good job of getting it out, like getting the bracket out. And then what they do is they, you know, talk to this coach from this place and this coach from this place and, you know, flash around. They have people stationed at different spots. They'll do that whole deal, but they'll get that bracket out pretty quick and it'll be a lot of fun. But listen, it's the last one we got before you get there. And, like I said, hopefully we get to see some Georgia practice later today and we'll definitely be back with you on Sunday. But for this episode of the Georgia Show presented by American Pride Bank, we'll see you later on.